I know the only difference is my hair's shorter. I'm glad that Pastor Jack didn't have a clip from our first service on Palumbo Drive. I enjoy watching it. I actually have that DVD in my desk, and it was the end of service. Pastor has finished preaching, and I don't remember what you said. You said something like, "You know, if you need prayer, we're going to minister for the sick, minister to the sick." And I was in the shot, and I was ushering. I mean, I would go down and help. Boy, I tell you what, I was pulling my pants up like we were taking over the world. I said, "Come on, let's go. I got this." And it's amazing to me that it's been 25 years. I mean, it doesn't seem that long. But before I go any further, I want to make one thing very, very clear. I have never, ever had my inner voice use the word ramification like he did to Pastor Jack. I had to look up ramification. It's right next to schematic. But go with me to 1 Timothy chapter 1, and it's been an interesting 25 years. Pastor and I were talking at one of the breaks, and we don't look back very often. We tell stories, we talk about things that we've learned, but we really don't look back. I love how Paul said it. I forget those things which are behind me, and I press on towards the mark. But I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, Pastor Sherry talked about it. When the Lord called me into the ministry, we were still part of the denominational church. I had quit my job. And when the Lord told me to quit my job, he didn't tell me quit your job and go into the ministry. All he told me was quit my job. And I'll give you a little more detail about my phone call to Pastor Callahan. Now, I've learned a little bit since then. But understand, it took every bit of bravery, courage that I had to make that phone call. I can tell you where I was sitting. I can tell you the room that I was in, and I picked up the phone, and this is how long ago it was. It still had a cord attached to it. And I called him up, and I said, "Pastor Callahan, this is Jim Schreiner. I'm calling you because you're my pastor. I'm not calling to ask you what your opinion is. I'm not asking what you think. I'm just telling you God spoke to me to quit my job. Thank you. Goodbye." Because it took every bit of courage, like I said, to be able to make that phone call. But it was a short time after that, after I'd quit my job. My last day was on a Tuesday. And it was that following Friday, the Lord spoke to me and said, "I want you to start out on the streets with these guys." And that was the day that he'd called me into the ministry. And this is the verse, and I know quite a few people that God has used, 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse number 12. And he says, "I thank my God. I thank Christ Jesus our Lord, who hath enabled me, that he counted me faithful, putting me into the ministry." I apologize that my message isn't good enough, and Paula has found a good one online that she would rather listen to. So I... So anyway, as soon as she finishes, I'll go on. We were driving someplace the other day, and Elizabeth said something, and her phone thought it was, "Hey, Siri." And so Siri says, "What can I help you with?" And Elizabeth said, "Shut up, I don't need you." And Siri goes, "I was just trying to help." I thought, this is getting creepy. I mean, isn't it a funny feeling? I get in my car in the morning, and my phone comes up and says, "It's an hour and 42-minute drive to Beattyville, and all the traffic's clear." Wait a minute. How did you know I was going to Beattyville? But anyway, and so the Lord called me into the ministry. I saw the pulpit. I saw the platform. I saw the crowds of thousands. And that's how he tricked me into getting into the ministry. And I didn't see everything in between. I didn't know. You know, we thought, just like Pastor Jack said, we thought in no time at all, especially after Grace Fellowship started, in no time at all, we'll be in the thousands, we'll have churches all over the world, and we'll be coming together with meetings of hundreds of thousands of people. And we didn't see everything between "I've called you into the ministry" and where we even are today. And I think God's smart enough to realize not to show us all that stuff, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that we've seen that if I'd have seen it back then, I don't know that I would have agreed. It is very interesting. For the first time in probably 23 or 24 years, I went back and visited Pepsi-Cola. That was the job that I had. That's where I was very successful there. I was on my way up the corporate ladder, and I still have some friends that work there. And I went back just to visit. She was actually a secretary then to the vice president, and now she is one of the vice presidents of Pepsi. And she told me, she said, you left at the right time. It's good that you got out of here. It's not at all like what it was. But one of the things that was funny that she told me was, I want you to know that I defended you. And I said, I needed defending? And she said, I can't even tell you everything that was said about you after you left. People thought you were crazy, but not just they thought you were crazy. The things that they were saying about you, but she said, I wanted you to know that I defended you from the day that you left. Now, I'm seeing people now that I haven't seen for 20, 25 years since I left Pepsi. And they're telling me, I thought you were crazy. I thought you had lost it. But there is no question, looking at what you're doing now, where you are now, that you did exactly what God had called you to do. And so I want to talk a little bit in my time. Go with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. And Paul's writing, and he says in verse number 4, but in everything commending ourselves as servants of God, in much endurance, in afflictions, in hardships, in distresses. Now, when the Lord called me, even when we started Grace Ministries, I didn't think about the afflictions, the hardships, the distresses. You know, we've been, Elizabeth and I have been in Beattyville now going on 23 years. And our original plan, when Apostle Callahan talked to me about starting the church in Beattyville, our original plan would be we would be there for 6 months. We would get the church up and running. We would get the people involved. We'd get some income into the church, and then we would turn it over to somebody else. And that was almost 23 years ago. I'd like to note that I didn't say that Jennifer Fields actually said that's a trick of Pastor Callahan's. But we didn't see all the things that we went through. I was sure, you know, like every one of us, God told us to start this church. It was going to grow overnight. I am so thankful now that it did not grow quickly. Because back then, if it had grown quickly, it probably would have destroyed me. It could have taken me out because I wasn't ready. I think back to some of the things I did when we started that church, and I'm like, God bless those people. You know, they had to actually put up with me. But I'm so thankful now. And again, we're still growing. We're going to continue to grow. But this the things that we've been through in Beattyville. People have this idea how easy ministry is. And we go to different countries, and they're amazed that Elizabeth and I drive 2 hours to get to our church. That I'll drive twice a week to get there. And understanding when we would go, when we started the church, if our offering was over $10, I was in revival. Because, I mean, to get double digits was major to us. And all the accusations they brought against me and still do. You know, I just came to Eastern Kentucky to take all the money out of it. Well, at $7 a week, in 22 years, I still haven't gotten much money out of Eastern Kentucky. They would say, I was on television at the reason we started the church there is there's a TBN station, 24-hour a day television and radio station, and no Word of Faith Church. And so I did a television program on that station, and people would call into the station to ask about our church. And this is what the TV station would say. They would say, yeah, he's a pretty good preacher, but it's too bad he's a womanizer. That's what the TV station told people that called in about my TV show. Now, number one, they don't know me. And number two, they don't know my wife. Because I got to go to sleep sometime. But that's what they would actually tell people. And because I had somebody who called in and they said, Pastor, you know, we would have come sooner, but we were told you were a womanizer. They've said that, you know, I've stolen so much money from our church that I own a townhouse in Alaska and a townhouse in Florida. And I fly my helicopter between the two places. Now, my people, my church, they're very defensive of me. They watch out for me, and they're getting so upset. And I said, you have got to correct these people. I am not flying a helicopter from Alaska to Florida. I'm flying my jet. Please straighten these people out. And so people see where we are now, and we're not near to where we're going to be, but have no idea the price that's been paid to get where we are. And so it's a little bit of what I want to go through. You know, Pastor Jack talked about it. We just got back from Ghana, and we know we made an impact. We know that we made a difference. We know that lives were changed. And I want you to know how glamorous my life of ministry is. So we get home Tuesday evening. We have our minister's meeting on Wednesday, and I'm sitting in the minister's meeting, and I've shared a little bit about Ghana. And I get a text message from my wife, and she says, "We need you out in the sanctuary. I'm sure somebody needs deliverance or be healed or something." And so I got in the sanctuary, and I said, "What's going on?" And she goes, "Something in the women's bathroom stinks." I said, I'm sharing about Ghana and God and spiritual. And so you want to know what glamorous ministry job I did on Wednesday? Thank you. I appreciate that. A raccoon had gotten into the ceiling. Now, he's a pretty smart raccoon because the ceiling tile directly over the toilet had 5 piles of raccoon poop on it. So he and urine, because we don't say pee. So I got my head up in the ceiling, pulling out ceiling tiles with raccoon poop on them. It's a glamour. My wife left. She helped by throwing up 3 times. Wasn't very helpful. So I didn't see all that. And it's amazing how many people get this idea that you get to the place that you don't have to deal with that kind of stuff anymore. Because truthfully, I found out being a pastor and cleaning up after raccoons is there's a lot of similarities to it. There's some things that stink, and you got to deal with some poo. Go to Romans chapter 12. Where no oxen are, the stalls are clean. But by them is much work accomplished. I'm still working on confessing the second part of that verse, but the first part is really true. Where no oxen are, the stalls are clean. And so if you've got people, you're going to have some cleanup work to do. And the point that I want to get across in my time today is, and everywhere I go, everyone I talk to in ministry, I tell them the same thing. Don't ever lose the heart of being a servant, because we're here for people. That's what ministry is about. Ministry is not about promoting me. It's not about promoting my church. My ministry is about helping people. That's what it's truly about. And I've watched so many, and I'm not thinking of anybody, any ministry in particular, but I've watched so many that get to the place that their ministry is about them. It's not about the people. One of the stories, and I hope it's not one that's in your notes. I should have looked at them. But one of the times that Apostle Callahan went to the Marshall Islands, and it was very difficult with the person that was interpreting, and went back to his hotel and realized, I have to find out how to reach the people. I've listened to people minister, I've listened to people preach, that their preaching is all about how much they know and how eloquent they can be. And you've got to understand that ministry is about finding out where the people are, reaching them where they are, and bringing them to where you want them to be. I'm not here to wow you with my ability to preach. That's not what it's about. I want to help people. And in Romans chapter 12, this is a very interesting verse to me, because he says in verse number 3, Paul says, "For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think." Now, isn't that interesting? God warns, and I'm going to put it, this is my translation of the Bible, but you ain't all that. God is saying, don't forget the things that got you here. No matter how much I use you, no matter how many people's lives are changed through you, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. I tell people all the time, the number one call that God has placed on my life, it's not pastoring a church in Beattyville. It's not traveling around and preaching. The number one call that's on my life when God first called me into the ministry is to serve Apostle Callahan. That's what he called me to do. That has never changed. That never will change. I can't be talked out of it. It's not like I've arrived and I don't have to do those things anymore. That's the number one call. I remember when we were doing meetings in Kansas, we had a church out there that was a part of us, and Elizabeth and I had flown out, and I was doing a weekend of meetings there. And I think on Thursday, we were meeting at the Hyatt at that time. And so I had gotten in the habit of every Thursday, I would call the Hyatt and make sure we were set up for Sunday. And I was driving from the cabin they had us staying in at the lake into Harrington. And I called the Hyatt and I said, hey, I'm just, this is Pastor Jim from Grace Fellowship. I'm just checking on our meeting for Sunday. And I hear him clicking on the computer and she says, sir, we don't have any space for you on Sunday. I said, we've been with you every Sunday for almost 2 years now. We don't have any space for you on Sunday. So now I have to make probably one of the toughest phone calls I've ever made in my life. Because let me ask you, how many of you would like to have to call Apostle Callahan to explain to him on Thursday, we have no place to have service on Sunday, and I'm in Kansas? Yeah, but honestly, Pastor Jack said you might want to stay there. My first thought was, I'll cancel everything going on here, and I'll go home. Because that's the number one call on my life. That's the call that God has placed on me. That's what's gotten me to here. I'm not about to jump ship now. You cannot ever lose that heart of a servant. And so I called Pastor Callahan. I'm apologizing and all that. And people back home got on the phone. That's the first service on Sunday that we ever met at the location on Briar Hill. But that was from Thursday to Sunday. We had to do that. Now go with me to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37. It's interesting. You get started in this and there's so many thoughts, so many old stories that come to mind that things that we've been through. I remember one of the trips, Pastor had been invited to preach. I don't remember what the meeting was. I just remember we were at a Catholic retreat center. Aglow. It was an Aglow meeting in West Virginia. And he and I went, and we stayed in the dorm. And I'll never forget it, because they're little dorm room beds, and we're getting ready, you know, to finish up for the night. And he looks at me and goes, we've been some interesting places, haven't we? Yeah, this ranks up there at the top, I got to tell you. We were in Mexico City the last time that we were there. And it was the Sunday night, the last service we were doing. We were in the van, driving from the pastor was driving us from the hotel to the church. And he's on the phone almost the entire trip. And finally, he hangs up and he's real quiet. And he goes, I don't know how to tell you all this. You all remember that? I don't know how to tell you all this, but we just got a phone call at the church from the cartel threatening us that if we don't start giving them part of our offerings, they're going to start hurting our people. What do y'all want to do? That's what I want to do. And the pastor's son said, no, God's our protection. Well, that's all well and good, but you've advertised all over. We got two Americans preaching here tonight. And so we both prayed about it. We told the pastor, we'll be fine. We'll go and we'll minister. And so we're fine, but they don't feel comfortable having us back. That was an interesting ride to the church that night. You know, we're going to start hurting your people. If you see, this is so glamorous. But what we get to do behind the pulpit and minister people's lives makes all that worth it. There's none of this. I can't tell you there's anything that we've been through that I wanted to stop and say, I don't want to do this anymore. I so enjoy what I do in ministry. I've learned to enjoy all of it. We had... If you ever notice, when you come to the church in Lexington, we've got a row of bushes right before you walk into the sanctuary. Well, that row of bushes hides what I lovingly refer to as the poop grinder. It's actually a sewage lift station, because What people do in those bathrooms has to get out to the septic field in the front yard. Well, a few years ago, it stopped working. That's not good. I'm not a plumber, but I know if the sewage lift station stops working, the sewage no longer gets lifted. And it went out the week before the Word Rally. And it was, if I remember right, the bid to fix it was almost $30,000 to replace these pumps. And so at that time, we didn't have the $30,000, but we had the Word Rally that week. And we didn't need pumps replaced. We had Pastor Jim. Now, most people, I mean, I've told the story, but you know, most people don't want to know the truth. I would get to the church every morning of the Word Rally about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I would run a hose down into the sewage lift station that was full of sewage into a pump and pump it through the parking lot to the septic tanks in the front yard. And then the hose actually kind of leaked, which made it even more fun. And so then you're out there with a water hose spraying it down. And I remember one morning, one of the pastors, who amazingly isn't with us anymore, came in and said, you know, I'd offer to help you, but you'd probably let me. And walk past me into the sanctuary. But you know, I mean, I'm not telling you I enjoyed running a hose down into the sewage lift station, but I was having a ball. I heard Mac Hammond say it years ago, the worst day in the ministry is better than the best day doing anything else. Yeah. Appreciate that. I've tried to forget those things which are behind me. We figured out a way to fix it for much less money. But you had to get down in there to take the old pumps out and put new pumps in. You had to get down. Not since I was unsaved and drunk have I put my head in a place like that. You understand what worshiping the porcelain god is? Driving the big white bus. And we had to get down in the sewage lift station. I've been there. Don't tell anybody. I mean, it was one of the most disgusting things I've ever done, but I'm telling you what, I'm in the ministry. I'm in full-time ministry. I'm having the time of my life. Not when I was in there, but who else can get up behind the pulpit and preach? I have been in a septic tank. Can I tell you a story on Pastor Jack? Thank you. I appreciate that because when we were building Apostle Callahan's house, it was at the time to put the leach lines in for his septic system. And it was cold, it was raining, and we were having a men's prayer breakfast at the church. And so Pastor Jack calls me up and says, "Hey, Pastor Jim, I've got the guy in the backhoe here. I'm paying him so much an hour, and I need some help to lay these sewage lines to make sure that they're level and how they're supposed to be. Can any of the guys come there and help?" And I said, "Well, we're almost done with the prayer meeting. I'll have somebody come as soon as we're done." He goes, "I need somebody right now." And I said, "Well, is there anything you can do until one of us can come?" Now, when I tell this part of the story, I picture Pastor Jack with a pointy hat riding a broom. Because this is what he said. Now, it's cold, it's raining, it's muddy, and Pastor Jack's answer was, "I guess I could get Bonnie." Except I think he sounded even more pitiful than that. So I excuse myself from the prayer meeting, I get in my car and I go out there, and this is what he had the audacity to say: "I didn't expect you to come." I was like, there's only one of us that actually believes it, and it's not me. I said, "You might as well cast a spell. I could get Bonnie." It was a word of wisdom. That's yeah, it worketh. Genesis chapter 37. You know, Pastor Jack kind of alluded to that story about the coal, and most of you have heard me tell it. When we got the school where the church is now, I go out there, and you know, I'm 25 years old, and we find out it has a coal burning furnace in it. That's how we heated that building, was with stoker coal. And so I knew nothing about it. I thought, I got to get some coal before the winter comes. So I go through the Yellow Pages, and I find a coal delivery service. And I call the guy, and I said, look, we're out here. We're renting the old Briar Hill School, and I need stoker coal. Can you come out here and take a look and tell me what I need? Guy comes out. He says, yeah, I didn't even know what stoker coal was, but he said, what you need is stoker coal. And he goes down and all officially measures our coal room, and he goes, yep, one of my trucks will fit here. One of my trucks. And he said, now you're going to have to figure out a way to get it from my truck into this coal room. I said, well, do you have any suggestions? He said, well, here's what I'd suggest. Go get a corn conveyor from one of the farmers around here. And he said, I'll bring my truck. We'll dump it in the corn conveyor. It'll shoot it right into this hole. Be no problem at all. So I said, okay, let's go ahead and order it. So I ordered my first load of stoker coal. And I'm standing out in the parking lot, and this semi tractor trailer load of coal pulls into the parking lot. And he pulls in, and he looks at my little apparatus of this little corn conveyor hooked to a tractor and starts laughing. And I said, what? He goes, you really think this is going to work? Oh, it'll work. It'll be fine. It'll work. So he backs up the semi-tractor trailer, lifts up the back end of it, opens a little door on the back, and we start a little conveyor. And I would say like the first two handfuls of coal went perfectly. And after that, bolts start flying off of this corn conveyor. Pieces go through the parking lot, and it shuts down. And I said, I looked at the truck driver. I said, what are we going to do now? And he goes, I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm dumping this coal. I said, where? He said, right here in the parking lot. I got to go. 32 tons of coal in the church parking lot.
I got the coal to repair the corn conveyor, though.
Yeah. And so four of us worked for 3 days straight shoveling coal through a foot and a half square door to get it into that coal room. And we got it in. We were climbing on top of it with rakes. It didn't fit. We still had like 6 tons out in the parking lot. And that's when somebody pulled up and said, so how are you enjoying the ministry? If they hadn't put their window up, I would have hit them in the head with a piece of coal. But Pastor David was one of them. I'm telling you what, Pastor David has to have pockets of caffeine stored in his body. Because one moment he'd be leaning on his shovel about asleep, and all of a sudden you go, and a ton of coal is in that room. Okay, Genesis chapter 37. I remember I finally got the boiler system up and running. It's a hot water system. And you don't know where the leaks are until you fill it with water. And just a piece of advice, if you ever do a boiler system that's hot water, check for leaks before you turn the boiler on. Because 220 degree water is not a lot of fun when it's spraying out of broken pipes. And so we got it up and running, and you have to go through and bleed all the different radiators in all the rooms, and we got all of them working except the one down in the basement, what used to be our fellowship hall. And so I'm doing everything I can. They have bleeder valves, and this one radiator, the bleeder valve on it, is totally stopped up. So I got this brilliant idea straight from hell. If you'll just loosen that bleeder valve far enough, the air will bleed out through the threads. Make sure you stop before the last thread. Because it shot out like a bullet, and 220 degree water is spraying everywhere. I'm standing in it. Now, I'd only been saved 6 years. But I'll never forget it, because a word came out of my mouth. That was in the sewage lift station. Before I could even think, And I turned, and one of them was Mike Goldie. I will never forget it. You know, Mike's brand new saved too. And here, one of the pastors says this word, and I turn around and Mike's going, I'm thinking about steaming hot water, and he's looking at me going, yeah. I said, what you all say. I don't know where that came from. I knew exactly where it came from. Genesis chapter 37. Oh, my goodness. It says, then verse number 5 said, Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers. They hated him even more. And he tells them the dream about they're all going to bow down to him. They really loved him after that. Then you go down to verse number 23. Joseph goes to visit his brothers, says they stripped him of his tunic, that multicolored coat. They took him and threw him in the pit. Now the pit was empty without any water in it. When I look at the life of Joseph, it did not matter what he was going through. His heart always stayed right. It didn't matter. I got this picture of him in the pit going, I can't wait to see how God gets me out of this. I don't remember who I heard say it, but how perfect the timing of God is. If we can keep our heart right, if we can keep our attitude right, do you understand? It was like, if I remember correctly, it was like a 2-month journey for the Midianites to be at that pit at the perfect time for Joseph to come out of it. See, if we can understand everything that's going on behind the scenes, yet you may not be living in what God showed you yet, but everything's being put into place, setting you up for where He intends you to be. And stop trying to, I've quit trying to figure it out. I don't care. I don't care how it's going to work out. I don't care how He's going to get us the money. I just know we have all sufficiency and we abound to every good work. It doesn't matter the situation I'm in right now, what things feel like, what things look like. I mean, he goes, verse number 28. Then some Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled him up, lifted Joseph out of the pit, and I don't know anything lower for a Jewish man than to be sold as a slave to Ishmaelites. That's a bad day. I mean, it's bad enough to be sold as a slave, but to Ishmael? The descendants of Ishmael? Now you're a slave, but Joseph, there's no record of Joseph complaining. There's no record of Joseph saying, God, what happened? Where have you been? He didn't understand what was going on, but he knew, I got a vision from God. I understand that the day is going to come. Verse number 36. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, Pharaoh's officer, the captain of the bodyguard. Now go to chapter 39. I'm telling you, when you look at the life of Joseph, the hell this man went through and never once turned against God, turned against... Now, okay, will you be honest with me? Thank you. I'm going to talk to you. I mean, I know Pastor and Debbie are, but I'm not... How many of us, let me say it that way, that'll make us all feel better. How many of us, if your family did to you what Joseph's family did to him, would still be willing to help them in the time of famine? Or how many of us would justify, well, they're getting what they deserve? That's a man who kept his heart right no matter what was going on. Who kept his heart after God, no matter just and kept the servant's heart. He's been sold as a slave to Potiphar. And look at what it says. Verse number 2, the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. I love this. His success had nothing to do with his current situation. He understood the favor of God. He understood the blessing of God. Doesn't matter what I'm going through. Doesn't matter what things look like. And it says he was a successful man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. That's how we know Joseph's heart never got wrong. His heart never got bitter. His heart never turned against God because God was with him and prospered everything in his hand. Verse 4, so Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant and made him overseer over his house. And all that he owned, he put in his charge. I don't know many believers today on this side of the cross who have a better covenant established on better promises could go through just the first thing Joseph went through and still keep their hearts right. It's amazing how sensitive church, not you guys, how sensitive church people are. I love to watch the look on people's faces when they come into church and someone's sitting in their chair. I remember one word rally we had. I don't remember what night it was. And it was just, I mean, the power of God was so strong in this service. It was the end of the service. And this woman comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder and she goes, I'm blocked in. I said, what? My car's blocked in. I said, nobody's leaving. What do you want me to do? I don't know, but I want to leave. And I remember I was telling somebody the next day about it. And I said, I couldn't believe this woman. And these words came out of my mouth. And I said, and she knew who I was. And the Lord said, who are you? Y'all understand what I'm saying? How dare her talk to me that way? We have a church that we minister in Brussels. I was telling Pastor Jack and Pastor Bob this last week. And this pastor is a dear friend of ours. She is one of the sweetest ladies. But mornings aren't her time. And I can't tell you how many times she has forgotten us at the airport. And we just learn. We land, we take a taxi to our hotel. We just learn to do that. But the last time she forgot us, I'm standing in the airport trying to get in touch with her. She's asleep. And I said it out loud. And I said, and Bill Winston has been to this church numerous times to minister. And I said, I bet she never does this to Bill Winston. And the Lord said, you're not Bill Winston. Taxi! Genesis chapter 39. And go down to verse 19. So, I mean, he's risen to the top of Potiphar's house. And then, I don't know the way to say it, but Potiphar's wife gets the hots for him and then accuses him. And now he's thrown into prison. And we know Joseph's heart, that the heart of a servant never left him because in a short amount of time, he's running the prison. And then remember the dreams? He's interpreting dreams and they forget about Joseph. Beloved, I'm telling you what, in the 25 years, the number of people I've watched get offended because they were forgotten. One of the things I admire Pastor Callahan doing the schedule for our conferences. Because it is amazing to me how many people have got upset because they're not on the schedule. People have gotten mad and said, I've been with this ministry for 20 years and I'm not. Blah, 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 blah. Maybe that's the reason you're not on the schedule. I've told Pastor, I said, Pastor, it is a great honor for me to be behind your pulpit. But don't ever feel like you have to. I don't mean this the way, and I told him this. I said, I don't mean it the way this is going to sound. It's an honor to be behind your pulpit, but I don't care. I'm not driven. Because that's my definition of success. My definition of success is being where God has told me to be, doing what God has called me to be. I'm honored. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm honored to be behind anybody's pulpit. I'm honored to be behind my pulpit. I love what I do. And it says in verse 21, Genesis chapter 39, but the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him. And gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners that were in the jail. So that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. Now, I want to go to just one other area. Go to 1 Samuel chapter 16. And I want to help you. I love telling the stories. I mean, I'm telling you what, some of the things that we've been through, some of the things that God has brought us out of. And there's a lot of stories, a lot of testimonies from this ministry you won't know till you get to heaven. The things that we've been through, because we're not the type that'll get up and talk about how bad things are and, oh, this is rough. But people don't know the half. They really, really don't know the half of what God has brought us out of and what God has brought us through. But there's one thing that I want to get across to people that totally changed me. I'm honored to be able to travel with Apostle Callahan. I can't tell you how honored I am. But when I first started traveling with him, I didn't do any ministry. I didn't do any preaching. I didn't do any teaching. I had this little cart that had sound equipment on it. I would make our travel arrangements, our hotel arrangements, and I had this little cart that had a little mixer on it. We had, in-the-ear headphones for our interpreter. We had wireless mics for Pastor Callahan, and I pulled this little cart through the airport, and it weighed a ton. Yeah, because you took it once to the Marshall Islands. Once, I'd like to emphasize. And so we were in Mexico City, and I'm up in my hotel room. And I'm in bad shape. I'm not going to deny it. I'm in bad shape. I'm like, God, why am I here? You know, you've anointed me. I'm God's man of power and for the hour. I have a call on my life. What am I doing here? And my attitude was bad. I understand you all have never been there, but sometime you'll be able to minister to somebody. And I'll never forget it. The Lord said, I can find somebody else. And I repented. I got on my face before God, and I said, God, I'm here to serve. And it totally changed on the inside of me. That morning, we come down, and we're in the lobby of the hotel waiting for our ride. And Pastor Callahan looks at me, and he goes, okay, here's what we're going to do today. He said, Jim, this morning I want you to teach on such and such. I'm going to do this. And I said, excuse me? He said, what? I said, what did you just say? He said, here's what I want you to teach on this morning. And I said, should I go get my Bible? He said, you don't have your Bible with you? I said, I don't ever teach. But that was a defining moment in my ministry that I realized I got to keep my heart right. I cannot ever lose that heart of a servant. And so, and it's grown ever since then. Now we travel together, we minister, we travel separately. But this is something that changed on the inside of me. 1 Samuel chapter 16. And says in verse number 1, now the Lord said to Samuel, how long will you grieve over Saul since I've rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I've selected a king for myself among his sons. Now verse number 6. When they entered, so we know the story. He's going there to anoint the next king. Jesse brings almost all of his sons out. Remember where David is? David's out doing the work of a shepherd. And he brings all his sons. And look at verse number 6. It says, when they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before me. Surely this is the next king of Israel. Look at verse 7. I'm telling you, if you've got a call on your life, which every one of you does, I want you to see what God says to Samuel. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. See, God had already made his choice for the next king of Israel, and there was only one person that could fulfill that call, and it was David. So when he came to Eliab, he said, no, I've rejected this man. Why? Because he'd already chosen David. And if we could ever understand, there's nobody else that can do what I am called to do. There's nobody else that can do what you're called to do. If you'll get a hold of that down the inside of you, that takes care of all jealousy. It takes care of all competition. It takes care of me trying to promote myself. Because he goes through all of the sons and says, is there anybody else? Yeah, there's David. Well, guess what? I was the, yeah, there's David. But God knew where he was, and he got him. David didn't have to come marching in and saying, hey, what about me? They had to send for him and bring him before the prophet. And when I began to realize that, I don't have to promote me. I'm not in competition with anybody. It's all I have to do, the only thing that I have to answer for is what God told me to do. That's it. I don't have to answer for what he told you to do. Now, as a pastor, there is an answering, but I'm responsible for what he told me to do. I don't have to out-preach anybody. I don't have to, well, I hope they like me better than, I don't care if people like me. That's not my job. My job is just to do what he told me to do. And the number one thing he called me to was to serve. Was to serve my pastor. I want to tell one other story. I don't know how many years ago this was now, probably 10, 11 or 12 years ago. The Lord spoke to me one morning in prayer, and he said, I promise you, if you will do everything you can do to help and promote every ministry you come in contact with, I will catapult you in yours. That was the word he used, catapult. And I had to stop, and I thought about it, and I said, Lord, I'll do it. I will do everything I possibly can to help every ministry that I come in contact with. And the Lord said, all right. And the first phone call I got that day was from a pastor I couldn't stand. I understand that's not very spiritual, but there's some unlikable people. This guy, I was going to say something, but let's just say I'm thankful for Debbie. And this was the phone call. I said, I knew who it was. And I said, hello. And they said, here's what I need you to do for me. Oh, I'm fuming. And those words came back from the Holy Spirit. Did you tell me the truth? And I said, what do you need? I'll take care of it. That was the first one. I thought, God, come on, let me start a little easier. But I'm telling you, I've watched it. It's one of the things, one of the many, I need to say it that way, one of the many things that I appreciate about a pastor is he's not here trying to build his kingdom. He's not trying to build Grace Ministries. We're building the kingdom of God. And if people come become a part of us or they don't, we treat them all the same. And we treat them like kings. The way we take care of them when they come to visit, we've had people that come to see who we are, what we're about, and we will treat them like they're the most important person on the planet. It's one of the things I so appreciate that I've gotten a hold of. I'm not trying to build Grace Ministries or Grace Fellowship. I want to build the kingdom. That's all that matters to me. If you're supposed to be a part of us, be a part. If not, we still love you. We're still going to treat you the same. Amen? Hallelujah.